Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. And hope everybody's had a good day, hopefully indoors. The rain has just about stopped. Now, I don't know if that means for a while, but I mean, I was thinking about this a while ago. I don't know that we've had a day where it has rained as just constantly from early this morning through mid-afternoon. It never really stopped. It never really poured. I mean, we didn't have
late heavy
night, rain.
It sort of rumbled in late last night.
Yeah.
It's been here since.
And since then, from that point until about an hour ago, it was just steady rain.
And I think these are the same storms that have caused some severe weather in, I think Houston had some flooding, and in other parts of the, you know, other parts of the South have been hit. I was telling you, as long as you can avoid property damage or injury or anything like that, I'll take a rainy day because I know we're gonna have some really hot ones between now and the end of the summer. Some record temperatures elsewhere in the South. So yeah, be safe out there. But it's been a pretty wet one today.
Oh yeah, it has. Now looking at the radar, maybe this stuff's gonna move through. We will we'll let you know. Radar doesn't look bad right behind this, and Auburn baseball. Which opened the series against Alabama last night with a 4-2 win. Excellent pitching last night. Tanner Bauman with the game of his career. It was the longest outing he's ever had, the most pitches he's ever thrown, the most strikeouts that he's had. I mean, he went six plus left with a runner on base. That runner did score, so he was charged with two runs allowed. And then Will Cannon came in and pitched the final three, shutout. And Auburn beats Alabama 4-2. Cade Ballou with an insurance bomb in the bottom of the eighth. I mean, another mammoth home run out in right center to the left of the performance building. I mean, what a shot it was. So Auburn with a win there. They've now won three in a row and five out of six. And as we said, at last report, I mean, right now, the game is on. And if it, you know, if the rain stops, it's amazing how well the field there at Plainsman Park drains. So right now, we're proceeding with the expectation that Auburn, Alabama will play game two tonight at 6 o'clock. 5:45 will be the airtime on Wings 94.3.
Yeah, and as Auburn looks to finish the season with some positivity and some momentum and a couple of wins over arch rival Alabama, great start to the series last night. Yeah, Tanner Bauman, just outstanding stuff from a guy who, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, has the option?
I think he has the option of coming back.
If he wanted to. I know he's going through senior day stuff.
He's a senior. I don't know. He was a junior college guy. And then, so we'd have to look it up. He may have played 4 years starting in that would have been 21 then.
I'll check on that. I'll check when Tanner graduated high school.
I have not heard much talk about the possibility of him coming back. It would be great if he did. But you know, he's a lefty. And he's a guy that had been a bullpen guy. He'd been a reliever. And there was some talk around us in the stands last night. Well, why hadn't he been going this long all the time? And it's like, because he's been working up to starting.
Do you remember it was, I believe, the Kentucky game? There was a series after Auburn's tough start to the season in conference play where the story was, as I heard Butch tell Andy on the pregame show, he went to the captains.
Right.
And he said, who should start this game? Yeah. Who do you trust?
Who do you want?
And they said, and we asked Cooper about it, remember? And Cooper explained, it's Tanner Bowman. You know, the guy they would trust in a big situation, a must-win game, a game, you know, if they needed a stopper to change the momentum. He's the one that they trust. And great game for Tanner last night, a moment of triumph in his Auburn career as he gets to, I mean, a standing ovation. As he walks off the mound and Auburn gets the insurance home run from 109 exit velocity off the bat.
Yeah, no, I wasn't able. I was there, so yeah. They didn't show it on the board.
You know what? Does that sound about right? You know,
it does. It was a bomb. I mean, it's funny. The fellow in front of us, Cooper, had batted. Cooper McMurray was batting. Maybe he was the batter just before Cade or two before Cade. He got under one. And I guess
warning track, right?
But I mean, it was a moonshot to dead center. But as soon as the ball hit the bat, I said he got under it. And the guy in front went, "No, it's out, it's out." And the ball actually carried better than I thought. But when when Cade's bat made contact, it was like, that's no doubt.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, "Boy, how do you know?" It's like, well, I've watched baseball for a few years and. Used to call it that,
and Cooper, you know,
and you sort it, but I mean, man, you could just see the ball jump off his bat.
Cooper's shot, slightly smaller ballpark, or if he
pulled it any at all,
yeah, I mean, Cooper's shot. You're right, under it, but still, you gave it a good ride. The Cade Ballou one.
Oh yeah,
that's one of the bombs of the season. And again,
he's had a couple of them.
True freshman, a guy who maybe isn't done. Growing and developing as an athlete on top of his game as a hitter, which is right there, and if you're looking for bright spots in a season where Auburn is going to finish at the bottom of the SEC in the standings, I would look at the hometown kid, Cade Ballou, as one of the real bright spots this year, and hopefully it's the beginning of a long and productive Auburn career.
Yeah, no question about that. So
a home run like that
against Alabama. I did hear him on the post game.
It's got to be special.
Yeah, talking about that. So that was huge.
You think he's done that in the bowl? You think he's done that? I mean, maybe he's thinking like bottom of the ninth, game's tied or down one with a runner.
That's what you're always picturing. That's what you're always playing.
Maybe he's thinking that. But
backyard ball.
But when he was doing that, Alabama was probably the other team.
And, well, yeah. Growing up, it was probably Opelika. Yeah, it was Alabama,
yeah,
or it's whatever his favorite team's arch rival is in Major League Baseball.
Well, he got to hit one of those for real last night.
Yeah, he did. So again, we'll keep you updated. But it looks like Auburn Alabama baseball schedule will go off as scheduled today. We're just underway here on the Friday drive. Toasty and dry here inside the studio. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. And, yes, I did not expect to wake up this morning my phone's going crazy, everything, the big news story, and it is, there's no question, the biggest story of the day is the Scottie Scheffler, it almost appears like debacle, early this morning in Louisville. Because the early reports, the very first report or two, it's like, oh man, this is something that could look pretty bad for Scotty, even though I wasn't sure about the felony charge that he was booked with. But the more we go through the day and more people who were there and witnessed and you learn more of the details, it just appears like it was a big misunderstanding.
Yeah. So if you haven't heard about this, which feels unlikely, but I'll let you know. Okay. So Scottie Scheffler, number one golfer in the world, winner of the Masters this year, the favorite to win the PGA, which is going on right now in Louisville at Valhalla. This morning had an interaction with police.
Yeah, as he 5:07 this morning, yes, is what the official report said.
As he was arriving by car to the location of the PGA Championship at the entrance to Valhalla Golf Club, there had been, before Scottie Scheffler arrived,
a tragic accident.
Yes, there was someone working at the golf tournament as an employee of one of the vendors who had been struck and killed by a shuttle bus earlier that morning in an accident where the shuttle bus driver, you know, simply didn't see the person crossing the street.
So one lane was closed.
Yes,
right?
So police had halted traffic because of that. And the police report says that Scheffler refused to comply with the officers directing traffic and dragged an officer with his car was what the police report was what the police report said. Scheffler and his team are disputing that version of events, and they say that he stopped immediately upon being directed, and never at any point did he assault an officer with his vehicle. Unquote. It was and Scheffler has provided a statement. So Scheffler was arrested, charged with a felony count of assault of a police officer, three misdemeanors, criminal mischief, reckless driving, and disregarding signals from officers directing traffic. There's an arraignment set for Tuesday. Scheffler, according to his legal team, will plead not guilty when that happens on Tuesday. He's posted a statement to his Instagram, said that he never intended to disregard police instructions. He acknowledged it was a chaotic situation, and he has referred to it as a tragic accident and a big misunderstanding, unquote. Incredibly, Scheffler was arrested in front of an ESPN reporter.
Right.
Jeff Darlington happened to be...
And he described it as the car moving with the officer hanging on. So he described that this morning. I read his comments about an officer being dragged.
Yes, and the police report identifies the officer and says that after Scheffler refused to comply, he accelerated forward. The officer in question was dragged to the ground, suffered pain, swelling, and abrasions to his wrist and his knee, and was taken to the hospital after the incident. Scheffler was booked at the Louisville Metropolitan Department of Corrections at 7:28 this morning. He was released about an hour later, and he has since returned to the course.
And shot 5 under.
And he shot 5 under, and he's in a...
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Scheffler... you've got Colin Morikawa, who has powered to the front today. You've got Xander, who had that incredible round yesterday. He's near the top as well. So this is you've got a couple of the top names in golf rounding into Saturday in a pretty heated competition for the PGA.
Just all right. Here's the way it appears to me now. I mean, earlier today it looked like, oh, this is bad. You disregard, but. I mean, you have to sort of picture the entire situation. It's dark. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. If you're Scotty Scheffler, you're arriving and you're seeing someone in a yellow vest, which could very well just be security, and you're used to being waved through. So you expect that should go through. I don't know if his window was – I don't know if he rolled the window down or if he was just looking and seeing someone motioning with their arms. I can see where you would slow down and then you'd go ahead and go. I could also see from the officer's perspective, I don't know how experienced this officer is. I don't know if he had been someone who was there at Valhalla before the accident. And I don't know how closely he follows sports and golf and knew about the cars being marked. I mean, I can see a lot of different ways this could be a misunderstanding. And the policeman wants you to stop and you didn't understand. You go, the policeman hangs on, and yeah, he gets dragged and it hurts.
So there's the Jeff Darlington thing.
Uh-huh.
There's a version of events that's presented in the police report. Of that is disputed by Scotty Scheffler's legal team.
Mm-hmm.
ESPN reporter Jeff Darlington witnessed the incident.
Right.
His version of events is provided in the Mark Schlabaugh article, which is on ESPN.com right now. According to ESPN reporter Jeff Darlington, who witnessed the incident, Scheffler was trying to drive around the crash scene. At one point, according to Darlington, Detective Gillis, Detective Gillis attached himself to the side of Scheffler's car. Scheffler stopped his car as he turned into the entrance of Valhalla Golf Club. After about 20 or 30 seconds, Scheffler rolled down his window to talk to the officer.
I had not read that.
The officer grabs Scheffler's arm to pull him out of the vehicle. The officer reaches inside the vehicle to open the door. Once Scheffler was pulled out, he was pushed against the car and placed in handcuffs. Darlington was standing at the entrance as Scheffler was detained. Darlington said Scheffler turned to him and asked, "Can you help?" Darlington was instructed to back away by the police as they arrested Scotty Scheffler.
So, I mean, but again, I can see where both sides, didn't understand what the other side was trying to do.
I would be surprised, based on all of these versions of events, if it resulted in heavy penalties for Scotty Scheffler.
Oh, absolutely.
I
would be shocked.
I'm not sure the officer. We could find out if there was an overreaction,
I think right now, though, I think people want to blame one side or the other. I can see where both sides, again, I wasn't there. I didn't see it, but I could see where both sides could have very reasonable explanations as to why they did what they did.
When I was a student at UCLA, this would have been like either my first or second year, but when Barack Obama was the president, he used to stay at the W Hotel in Westwood, which was pretty close to campus, and that would result in a lot of security and a lot of police and streets blocked and things like that. And one time I was in Westwood trying to proceed, and I was being given different instructions by two different police officers directing traffic, and so I was being told.
And you knew where you wanted to go.
But I'm in a green light. The road straight ahead is blocked, and so one police officer is telling me to stop and wait while they direct. Another police officer is telling me to make the left turn right now, and the police officer telling me to go is becoming increasingly angry.
He's adamant, like,
as I don't go, and then as I start to go, the other police officer, the one being telling me stay right there, he becomes very animated.
Yeah.
And I think that's when they realized they were giving me counters. But I could see how something like that. And this
especially at 5 o'clock in the morning when there's been. An accidental death.
Yeah, this is a bright, busy intersection, where something like this happened. But I could absolutely see a scenario in the dark or something like that. Like, I mean, it's certainly unfortunate that anybody was injured in a situation like
it's
this.
Terrible, that someone was struck and killed.
Yeah, and I was talking about the Scheffler.
You mean in that instance?
Yes, if the Scheffler incident resulted in any injuries whatsoever, like it seems terribly unfortunate because it does feel ultimately like a misunderstanding resulting in where a guy.
I think it was
I don't know enough about Scotty Scheffler because I do think that he's a guy
that's pretty much considered. He's not a big newsmaker.
Yeah, I do think if a professional athlete had a history of troublemaking and something like this happened, they would say, "Oh, here's another. Mm-hmm. This guy's got a problem with authority, or this guy doesn't think the rules apply to him, or something like that." I am not aware of incidents where it seemed like Scotty Scheffler, didn't seem like the rules. I don't know if there's a track record.
Not that I know of
Scotty Scheffler acting as though the rules don't apply to him. So it would seem if that's what happened this morning, it would be out of character for Scotty Scheffler to have acted that way. But I'm sure that we'll learn more.
Oh, I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about this.
We'll learn
this
more
story
during the arraignment Tuesday.
We'll hear a lot more during the final 2 days of the tournament.
Yeah, as he is. Yeah, I mean Xander's in the front right now at 12 under. Morikawa, after a 65 under today, is at 11 under, and then Scheffler two back of Morikawa at 9 under. But you've got some real high quality golf in Louisville rounding into Saturday.
All right, we will get to our first break of the afternoon. That's not the only news of the day.
We could just do restaurants again.
I heard a lot of positive.
Yeah, there are some folks who love that.
We can do that again. I don't know if we'll do it 2 days in a row. Because I got another topic we can talk about today, and that is debuts. It wasn't his first time out, but Paul Skeens.
Skeensy.
Gonna be tough to top his performance today in his second major league appearance. We'll talk about that more. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. Podcast of The Drive, presented by our pals at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Love for you to join us. I don't think I said that the hotline is sponsored by Skybar. So come on in and join us.
First weekend with the students back in town this summer. It'll be a big one at Skybar.
Oh, you know
this weekend.
Stick with us or join us here on the Friday Drive.
Experience it online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. And yeah, I watched a good bit of the Cubs Pirates today because Paul Skeens was getting his second start. First start, he pitched so much better than the numbers showed because he left.
Yeah.
He got a little wild, left with runners on, and they all scored the other day. Today, he solved that by just not allowing any base runners. One base runner in six innings for Paul Skeens, and that was a walk. He struck out the first seven batters he faced at Wrigley Field today and set all kinds of Pirates and Major League Baseball records. Six innings, 11 strikeouts, one walk, no hits today.
Yeah,
100 pitches, his 100th pitch was 100 miles an hour.
I don't believe anyone has ever, nobody in one of their first two career starts in the history of Major League Baseball has gone six innings, no hit, with 10 or more strikeouts. Like that is a historic feat by a guy who is just coming in with we watched Paul Skeens that year at LSU thinking, you know, he probably wouldn't, I don't know if he would dominate, but he would probably step into most major league locker rooms right now and seem like a guy who belongs.
Oh, he would. You know, what we were thinking last year is he could slide in and be in a rotation. He's the ace of just about any rotation you're going to find. I don't know that he had that splinker last year. At least I don't recall it. But it's unbelievable because he throws three pitches that look exactly the same coming out of his hand that are at different speeds and go in different directions.
Who are young pitchers from the modern era? Young pitchers who you knew immediately belonged, like, oh, not, we're gonna be top shelf frontline starting pitchers for a
long
time.
A lot of them don't last. Lost a long time. You've mentioned Mark Pryor.
Kershaw. Kershaw belonged.
Dontrell Willis was phenomenal from the first time he went out there. You mentioned Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood,
Mark Pryor.
That,
sure.
that combo they had, Fernando. I mean, when you're going further back,
Strasburg.
No question. Strasburg's first start was seven in and shutout with 14 Ks. I mean, it's just one of those. That's like just unhittable. Is what Skeens looks like, and he doesn't throw it. You know, there's no herky jerky motion. I mean, everything is very fluid. He has got that hoss body. I mean, he's 6'6", 235. And, if he stays healthy, he will be an ace for quite a while. He's just 21 years old. He looks so much older. I think the stash makes him look a little older. But he's just 21.
Well, the fact that we tracked his college career, too. I mean, he's not new on the radar for us.
No, but
as folks who saw him, you know, his season at LSU.
But man, now everybody who was going against him last year is going, see, did you see his pregame interview? All right, so I was watching I flipped over. I wanted to watch the Pirates pregame to hear what he said, and their field reporter was talking with him pregame, and she asked him, are you concerned facing a team for the second time and them adjusting? You know what he said? He said, let them adjust. Good luck. I'm ready.
He's right.
That's what he said. He said, let them adjust. Good luck.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
I mean,
it's like he knows. It's like it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the adjustment is you wait till he's not in the game anymore, and then you try to hit.
And then they got a hit, and then they scored a run.
Yeah, and then they
lost 9-1.
And then you try to hit the other pitcher.
Yeah, it was 8-0 by the time he was out. All right,
just wait him out.
But that's what I sort of wanted to do that. I mean, to folks listening, I want to get folks to give us some of the most impressive newcomers that you've seen through the years, any sport, any level. Who was somebody that when they broke in or they debuted early on, it was like, wow, this guy is for real. This guy, gal, whatever, is for real. So we'll open that up. Let's go ahead and get to the phone, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. Spencer Strider comes to mind when you talk about early pitchers coming out.
You know what was crazy, though, is remember the Braves used Spencer out of the bullpen early on, and you can't really tell. You didn't know how that was going to translate to being a starter. But you're right. As soon as he moved into the rotation and got that first spot started, it's like, oh, man. Why hadn't he been doing this all along?
Bueller was sort of eased in to the Dodgers,
yeah,
as a reliever too. But once he got his footing as a starter, he was electric for a couple years as well. Hope he returns to form. Injuries can be tough, and you know that's a delicate thing when you're a starting pitcher.
I was going to revisit your first topic of the day, and having been a retired law enforcement and directing traffic at every Christmas parade and after high school football games and wreck scenes for 25, 30 years, I've been hit several times by cars, mostly just brushes, but escaped death multiple times along with other officers. And 99% of the time, it's due to driver inattentiveness. But having said that, if this guy came up on a accident scene at that time of the morning, I'm sure that the police lights and emergency lights were glaring, and he probably couldn't see half of what he thought he could see. And there's, like I said, some of that when you're trying to direct traffic. And there are some people that feel elite and don't think they have to obey the laws, but most of the time it's driver inattention and just can't see what's going on ahead of them.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I can really understand how both sides would misunderstand, what was going on or what the intention of the other was.
And having worked golf tournaments in the past, most of the officers working those tournaments are working overtime. So the officer that was there was probably there for the traffic control function for the.
Yeah, I thought about that too. I wonder how, you know, if it's 5 o'clock in the morning, I have no idea how long he'd been working or how familiar he was with the normal protocols that go there, allowing the players and other folks in. So, I mean, there's so many different factors that play into this.
Yeah, I'm sure there wasn't any ill intent on his part, but that's all I got. I appreciate y'all's time.
Good stuff, John. Great point. Glad you called in. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in as we continue.
We do have a little bit of portal news.
Yes, because, we do. Yeah, yes, we do.
We can talk about.
And another one bites the dust.
That's probably about right.
Okay.
That's
the portal news I'd see.
As our radio gaga continues here.
Yeah. All right, we're right back here on the Friday Drive.
27502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 24 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Again, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. And, I've tossed this one out there. I'd love for folks to join in. And just after the amazing performance by former LSU, I have to say former Air Force at LSU.
That's right.
Star. His parents were there today. His dad proudly wearing his Air Force shirt, Air Force baseball shirt today, as Paul Skenes at Wrigley Field facing the Cubs for the second time in a week, goes 6 innings, no hits, one base runner, it was a walk, struck out 11, and his 11th strikeout came on a 100-mile pitch on his 100th pitch of the day. So yeah, I've asked, and John came up. Yeah, Spencer Strider, from the moment he went out there as a starting pitcher for the Braves, it was dominant. I mean, just players, any sport, any level, with the big splash debuts. You know, sometimes that's it. I mean, there's some guys or players that, you know, may go out and just appear, you know, they're phenomenal. They're going to be Hall of Famers, and the league adjusts. But I was saying, as Paul Skeen said today, let them adjust. Good luck. You know, we'll see.
Trade rumors had a really interesting story today. It's not exactly about debuts, but it's in a way it is. But it's talking about how a lot of the really highly touted pitchers are coming up and having a ton of success early, but the hitters who make up the top prospects
you're right.
in Major League Baseball,
top hitting prospects, are struggling.
And the list that Ken Rosenthal of the Athletic cited: Jackson Holliday, Colt Keith, Henry Davis,
Jackson Churio,
Wyatt Langford. And one of the, here are theories as to why this might be happening. I wonder if any of these strikes you, Bill. Several people in the game agreed that the gap in quality between AAA and the majors is widening. J.D. Martinez suggested that the new rules about smaller rosters in the minor leagues are squeezing out veteran pitchers and reducing the quality of pitching at the minor league level, with the exception of the star prospects who make their way up the system.
A lot of those star prospects just make brief stops in AAA.
Stephen Vogt has said something similar. He's now manager of the Cleveland Guardians. The general manager of the Orioles has suggested that the scouting in the majors is so advanced that players will have weaknesses attached to a larger degree in the majors than they ever will in the minors. And the Rays manager, Kevin Cash, has suggested that minor league pitchers are more worried about developing their skills as opposed to results, and major league pitchers are more worried about results than developing their skills, and that can be a hard lesson for hitters making their Major League Baseball debuts now, because they're facing a different kind of pitcher when they get to the majors.
You're right, though. I mean, this has been a tough year, first of all, even though you're seeing some spectacular numbers.
That Dodgers outfielder is cooling off to a point where you can maybe lump him in.
Paez, yeah, he's down to, 260-something now. But I mean, the batting averages in the major leagues are down, big time down this year. ERAs are better than they've been. I mean, there's been some talk, are the balls deadened or whatever's going on? But I can see, young players, a lot of young guys are struggling. There just aren't many first-year players that have just come in and hit and been able to sustain that. That's an interesting interesting look.
And what's the subject of the Major League Baseball, the MLB trade rumors article that starts with talking about the struggles of the top prospects in Major League Baseball and the adjustment they have to make to hitting Major League pitching. The inverse is a team like the A's gave away most of their top prospects. They have a bunch of playing time available. They've gone out and they've found post-hype sleepers, guys who washed out,
guys that used to be
And it's amazing how
big
prospects. And it's a little. I mean, it's kind of like the team from Major League, right? The way they've assembled this team of guys that were at one point really highly prized by their organization, and then ended up on the Oakland A's. Like, it's almost like the last stop they could make if they want to still be in baseball. But they're thriving. So many of the Brent Rooker, Abraham Toro, Tyler Nevin, like these are all. I mean, it's a really interesting group of guys who were at one point supposed to be like part of the plan. Michael Kelly with the Phillies, like these were guys who were part of the plan long term, and now they're getting opportunities because it does. I mean, I guess it gets back to roster management, right, Bill? Like it gets back to deciding and how patient can you be with? And I guess it's a similar question college athletics is dealing with, right? Where it's do you want to be patient with a young player, or do you want to just go out and replace them with a with a veteran option right now that you can for the instant sort of instant result. You know, it's a tough thing to juggle.
Yeah, it is. So if you've got somebody in mind, and again, any sport, just a player that had an immediate impact and looked like whether they turned out to be or not, but looked like a future star, we'd love to hear from that. All right, one of the things we mentioned as we went to the bottom of the hour, yeah, as Dan said, some portal news, and another Auburn target is headed elsewhere. Dylan Mitchell, the former five-star signee and two-year starter at the University of Texas, who just visited Auburn in the last few days, went home to Tampa, was deciding between Auburn, Cincinnati, and Miami. And this afternoon, he announced he is committed to the University of Cincinnati. So another target for Auburn. I mean, he was a guy that we talked about as a potential four-spot guy, even though he said Auburn talked to him about being a big guard, playing the three, maybe a little two, and some four. And I think a lot of folks were it's hard not to get excited about the prospects of being able to add someone like a Dylan Mitchell. But now I guess we're down to the former Georgia State at SMU forward, and that's Jaheim Hudson, right?
Right, and that's I mean the hunt for the guard and the forward who will make up the final pieces of the Auburn roster continue. I would think, it's based on the way players have entered the picture in May and June in previous years, feels like it's going to be very quick between us hearing about Auburn's interest in them.
Yep.
And that player committing, or either with Auburn or somewhere else. Chad Baker Mazzara was on this. Like, Chad Baker Mazzara burst on the scene.
He visited and he committed and he was signed.
Right, and he went, and we knew very little about Chad Baker Mazzara pre-visit. I mean, I'd heard of him because of the Northwest Florida State thing, but like, he wasn't somebody that had been on Auburn's radar for a long time. And I suspect that's the way it's going to go here. Chaney Johnson, same thing, right? Like Auburn's the difference between. The time between Auburn's reported interest in Chaney Johnson and Chaney Johnson committing with Auburn was brief, and I would suspect that's going to be the case with whoever Auburn adds to the roster between now and the start of the fall semester.
We were thinking yesterday that Auburn might be waiting to hear from Dylan Mitchell. I think Auburn really seemed to be in a great position with Hudson. I would think right now Auburn tries to get Jaheim Hudson. Don't worry about visiting Nebraska. Come on in. Come on down. He talked about, loving the situation at Auburn. I think Auburn would be glad to go ahead and take him and have at least one of those spots filled. One other item, a news item to pass along. The Auburn softball team down in Florida State falls to Central Florida 11-6. So they fall back into the loser's bracket down there in the Florida State Regional.
Took the lead late, right? But then UCF rallies back, and they got work to do.
Really tough when you lose that first ball game. You've got a tough climb.
Double elimination,
right?
But still, work to do when you drop that first game.
All right, tell you what. Let's get to our final break so we've got time for calls, and we have calls holding. We've got Jerry and who else?
Mike.
Jerry and Mike will be the first two when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
Come experience
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final segment of hour number one, and let's get right to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Enjoy your show. A couple of people that made lasting impressions on me. The first is Roger Clemens.
The Rocket was pretty good from the jump, yeah.
And the next one is Pete Maravich.
Yeah, it's a shame he didn't have anybody to help him out when he would really, I guess, at any level. I mean, it was like Pete was the show.
Yeah. I thought when he got to the pros that he would really cut up, but, you know, he just didn't have any help around him. But he was a one-man show.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, but you could tell. I mean, the hype was real for Pistol Pete.
Yeah, didn't he only play 3 years?
Yes, because freshmen weren't eligible back then.
Right.
Played 3 years. There was no three-point shot, and he still averaged 44 a game for his career.
Yeah, it was amazing. All right, guys.
Appreciate it, Jerry. 334-321-1390.
Yeah, I know there's talk of like when reading the Jordan rules, the Sam Smith book about the first Bulls championship season, and Maravich was sort of regarded as like the emblematic of. And it wasn't all his fault, obviously, because the team around him wasn't good. But it was Jordan was sort of like people thought before the Bulls started winning, people were saying, "Oh, is Michael Jordan going to be a Pete Maravich who scores a lot for teams that can't beat the best teams?"
People sort of made fun of Pete a little bit, like he's a globetrotter. Oh, he's all show, so and so. And it's like, well, he was doing everything he could to win. But he needs some help.
And my understanding is Jordan ran into some of that before he started winning. Was people thought, oh, he's too focused on scoring on every point.
And people said that about Chamberlain. 334-321-1390 and was it Mike? Hey, Mike.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Well, the man that impressed me the most at playing in a position was Ozzie Smith. I don't think there's ever been another shortstop play it the way he played.
Great. It was a great moniker to be able to, you know, have him known as the Wizard of Oz. Yeah, no question.
Because I still watch him play it, and he was one of the greatest I'd ever seen. Because, I mean, did nothing get past him.
No, and then the cool thing was to watch him run out there to shortstop and just do the standing backflip.
Yeah, he could do all that. And but he probably changed that position more, and they've had a bunch of them. But during my time of growing up, he was a fine athlete I'd ever seen.
You're absolutely right.
Well, y'all have a good day,
man. Good hearing from you, Mike.
Good stuff, Mike.
Yeah.
All right, man.
334-321-1390. Who would you have? Dan. Hey, Dan. Dan, you there? Well, I guess we lost him.
He got nervous. So,
well, that's
call
okay.
Call us back, Dan. We're about to run out of time in hour
number
one.
Yeah, we've got a couple of minutes left here in hour number one. Again, quite a few things we can talk about. This is just sort of our fun project for today.
You know, and I've had people say, you know, I get why folks want to see some of Auburn men's basketball's starting, like some of the starters play more than they played last season. Which is, you know, there's some pushback to, does Auburn really need an extra forward or an extra guard?
Well, does Auburn need to play 10 guys is what a lot of people are saying, because nobody else does.
Right, and I think that there's, there's probably a middle ground there. There is some wisdom to the idea that players like Janai and Chaney and Denver could probably see an increase in their minutes versus
If Auburn beat Yale and got to and moved on a couple of more rounds, people would be like, "Yeah, this is great. Our guys are less tired than anybody else," because that's what everybody felt until then.
Right. No, I think that Auburn's depth was a weapon for much of the season, and it's tough to play Bruce Pearl's style stay out of foul trouble playing heavy minutes, and also remain fresh and avoid fatigue.
All right. Let's see if we can get back with Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I watched Skeens debate, too, and Yump didn't do him any favors. There's probably 10 or 20 pitches.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I mean, he was having to throw everything really in the zone to get it called a strike.
Yeah, I counted at least a dozen that I thought were strikes, but it was great debate or debut. There's a couple that I think of first time I saw him, I thought, wow. One was Steven Strasburg.
Yep.
He, opened against the Pirates at 14 strikeouts in 7 innings, and I thought, man, that guy is going to be good.
If he could have stayed healthy, I mean, he was great when he was healthy.
He was pretty good, but you know, cut short, but pretty good.
And then the other one was Cam's first game at home. He made that run, and my wife looked at me and she goes, "We're getting number 2 jerseys after the game." It just you could just see it. I thought he just had something special in him.
Oh yeah, well I mean, and it's funny because a lot of folks after the spring were wondering because you know didn't show much in the spring because you had that two-hand touch thing going on where you couldn't really see what he could do with his legs.
And missed a couple of throws in the spring game too that had people worried about the accuracy and stuff. But I think you know quickly those fears were put to rest.
All right, thank you guys.
Good stuff, Dan. Thanks for calling. All right, we're just about out of time for hour number one. Once again,
yeah, I was watching that game in a coffee shop in West Los Angeles. We didn't have internet yet because I just moved into my place.
Uh-huh.
So I went to the coffee shop to watch the game on my laptop, and I'm doing fist pumps and cheering like Cam running down the sideline and stuff. And then I found out about the Auburn bar, and so I was like, oh, I'm gonna go to the Auburn bar watch the game. So cool. I can stop annoying people at the coffee shop trying to do work while I watch my football game.
Once again, and we'll keep you updated, but it looks like Auburn, Alabama baseball is good to go in about an hour from now. It hasn't rained over the last hour, and the last I looked at the radar, didn't look bad, at least for a while. Now, tomorrow, that may be a different story. They want to try to get this one in if they can this evening. All right, we're back with hour number 2 of The Drive. Come on in and join us.
Or 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome into hour number 2 here on the Friday Drive. Hope everybody doing well, staying dry. It is slacked up. I don't know if it's completely stopped. Doesn't look like I see any drops falling in the puddles outside our studio here. We've gotten a good bit of rain here since the early hours of this morning, but it looks like Auburn and Alabama baseball, which is scheduled for 6 o'clock, is still a go. The Tigers won the opener last night 4-2 behind outstanding pitching from Tanner Bauman and Will Cannon and timely hitting, including an insurance bomb by Cade Ballou last night. And Auburn looks to wrap up the series, win the series, and really put some pressure on Alabama this evening as they will send Chase Alsup to the mound. Alsup has pitched very well his last couple of times out. So if you were thinking, well, they probably won't be able to play tonight, the plan is for them to be able to go ahead, and we'll keep you updated on that. Welcome in. Hour number 2 of The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan in the studio, Drew at the controls, and the second hour of the show brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. We'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise in hour number 1, we talked about the Scottie Scheffler incident from earlier this morning when he was arrested and booked and charged with, was it 4 or 5 different counts? 1 felony and a few misdemeanors on what
there is right there.
What appears, yeah, he shot a 66 today and is 9 under. He was able to get back out and continue. And an incident where Scheffler apparently continued when an officer had wanted him to stop. Scheffler said he didn't understand the officer, and the officer, I don't think, realized that it was someone needing to get into the course. So we will see what happens. I'd be surprised if anything really noteworthy ends up coming out of this. But it was definitely the buzz, especially earlier in the day there at the PGA at Valhalla in Louisville. Xander Schauffele continues to lead. He was 12 under last time I saw the leaderboard here. So
Colin Morikawa, who won, I believe it was the PGA a couple years ago. If you remember that PGA, they had no fans for the COVID, the social distance PGA tournament where it was. It was so surreal to see, you know, the wide shots where, you know, the golfer was the only one out there on the entire. And you know, I know they'd probably be leaving some money on the table. There should be a tournament every year where it's like, you know what? No spectators. This thing is for TV. And it is because Colin Morikawa and the other golfers said there's one kind of pressure when you're out there and the fans are all watching and they're reacting to, let's say you got a high pressure putt or a high pressure drive or something. Like there's one kind of pressure when the spectators are there. You take the spectators away, it doesn't take the pressure away. Like it's, I mean, these are still, you know, what Colin Morikawa had to do down the stretch to win the PGA a couple years ago. Like it's still, but it was a different and odd kind of pressure. And I wonder if, you know, maybe the younger players on the tour were better suited to it than the guys who had just spent years and years of their lives feeding off the, you know, the raucous crowds at these big at these big tournaments. But yeah, Morikawa in that mix at the top with Xander and Scotty.
And let's see, we also talked about the second major league performance from Paul Skeens, which very difficult to top. As a matter of fact, it has never been topped by anyone in their first two outings. 6 no-hit innings with 11 strikeouts and one walk, one base runner in 6 innings as he picks up his first major league win today. We also talked about news from the transfer portal. Auburn target Dylan Mitchell committing to the University of Cincinnati. So we will see. Auburn's got at least 3 football prospects visiting this weekend. Not transfer prospects. These are prospects for the class of 25 in football. And they're all pretty big guys. 2 offensive linemen and a linebacker. We can get into that a little later on.
We had a podcast. The Auburn Observer had a podcast yesterday. Went live this morning talking with Christian Clemente, who had a lot of really interesting information about not just the targets that Auburn is looking at in the class of 25 and 26, but what's changed. Because I'm really curious from the guys who follow recruiting boots on the ground. You know, they talk to the recruits, they talk to the coaches. Yeah. Like, I'm curious to see, and Christian only goes as far back as Brian Harsin. Like, he can't compare it to the Tuberville approach or the Chiswick approach.
No,
the Malzahn
not like Jason can.
Not like Jason.
His compadre,
and Brian and some of those, you know, the guys around that have been following Auburn recruiting for a while. But the stories that Christian has heard from people about the relentlessness of Hugh Freeze and his staff and the way something I know we've talked about before with Jason, the way that they've really looked at, okay, what schools in the area have become, like what high schools in the Southeast, but especially in the immediate area, have become places that are sending a lot of college football players to the D1 level. Are what kind of relationship do they have with Auburn? Why is it? Because you think about, I mean, some of the schools in Alabama,
right?
Thompson, Central Phoenix City, you know, they were sending high level players elsewhere in college football, but you didn't see them coming out of Auburn necessarily. Schools in Atlanta, Buford, Langston Hughes, you know, and you're seeing more Auburn, Auburn has players on the team now from those places. And they have targets in the class of 25 and 26 from those places too. And it's, you know, I think that Hugh Freeze's attempts to build pipelines into places that tend to have routinely have D1 caliber players and occasionally or frequently have 5 stars and you know universally sought after kinds of players, impact players. Like that's something that was missing from Auburn's high school recruiting in the past, and it's something that Hugh Freeze seems to really be, really be laser focused on trying to build.
Oh yeah, there's no question about that. So So, yeah, we'll run down the players that are visiting. One of the things I tossed out, we were talking about that performance from Paul Skeens, and we've had good response from folks on players you can recall when they debuted or when they were first getting their start. Any sport, any level, it was obvious, wow, this is a special talent. It doesn't mean that they didn't necessarily have to go on to be Hall of Famers. A lot of these guys end up being sort of like supernovas. Something happens, but man, their star shines very brightly from the outset. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join in.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And let's get back to the phone. I think Jerry's back with us. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, I just saw a report about Scottie Scheffler that another golfer went through the same situation that he did, and he got passed through with no problem.
Yeah, I'd heard a little of that. I haven't read that story, but I heard some talk earlier today that Scheffler knew that other golfers were being waved through. And that sort of gets back to where I feel like it definitely seems like a misunderstanding. I don't know if the officer that was involved with Scheffler had, you know, how long he'd been there, or if other folks that had access and were supposed to be granted access to the course were being let through by him. So, yeah, it looks more and more like just an unfortunate misunderstanding.
I mean, look,
on both parties.
If Scottie Scheffler knew that a police officer was holding onto his vehicle and he kept driving
and
anyway,
was trying to get him to stop, he probably, yeah.
He should probably be in some trouble for that. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm not nothing draconian or anything, but you probably can't do that even if you're the number one golfer in the world. I don't know if that's necessarily what happened though, right, Jerry? Like, that's like maybe there's a lot of room for interpretation, or it's not cut and dry that's exactly what occurred.
We'll find out.
No, you're right about that.
And another first impression would have to be Bo Jackson.
Oh yes, yeah. From the first time that you saw him play, you wondered what was Alabama thinking when they said when Ken Donahue told Bo Jackson that he might not play till he was a junior.
Yeah. Okay. Good night.
Baseball. My baseball answers would be cheating to pick a guy who came over as a pro. But Ichiro, I'd never seen anything like Ichiro when he was a rookie. Because
you're right, I'd never seen anybody with the bat skills.
Yeah, the bat skill. I mean, we'd seen fast.
He hit anything anywhere. Tony Gwynn was another guy like that.
Yes, the contact skills were there. I mean,
wherever the pitch was, they could hit it, and they could hit it where there weren't defenders.
Pujols hit it like a Hall of Famer as a rookie.
Yes, he did.
As a rookie, you saw, okay, this guy.
A-Rod.
Yeah, A-Rod too. I mean, another guy who, you know, it hasn't necessarily turned into a Hall of Fame career, but I remember watching Stanton as a rookie multiple times when he was Mike Stanton.
Mike Stanton.
Mike Stanton with the Marlins.
Yeah, another sad loss from the company.
And he was hitting 515-foot home runs as a rookie, and you were saying, this guy could be, and he's still as dangerous. When he gets a hold of one, he's still capable of sending it into orbit. It's just staying in the lineup and sustaining the contact rate and keeping the on base at an acceptable level.
Maybe you ought to go back to Mike.
Maybe, but he's. I mean, Giancarlo's pretty cool. I'm not gonna fault that one.
He's the only Giancarlo that I can recall in baseball.
Yeah, Esposito.
Esposito, you're right. There was
another pretty good Giancarlo. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, not quite Stanton though. All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Jeff is up next. Hey, Jeff.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good.
Good. It's Wet Friday. So hopefully everybody stays safe out there.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Yeah. A couple of names you're talking about, these phenoms that came on the scene. Two I can recall vividly, being a youngster, Fernando Mania.
Oh, I've yes.
Been a Dodger fan.
Yep. Started, yeah, was 7-0 his when he first came up. I mean, was untouchable when he first yes. came up. Yeah.
Yes, and being living in Alabama prior to moving to the West Coast, it was hard to even keep up with him. I would have to, you almost have to wait to the Saturday afternoon game of the week to see any highlights on him. You know, those of us old enough to remember the game of the week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But the Fernando Mania was unbelievable.
No, so I'm too young for Fernando, but I was watching Kershaw obsessively as a rookie, and that was the comparison people were making as far as it. And it didn't quite get the pop culture status of Fernando mm-hmm. Mania, but to come up as a rookie and look so poised and pitch so well, like, you know, it's rare to have. I mean, I guess the Dodgers have had more success with that than because it's people of a certain age, Bill, would remember. Hideo Nomo was a sensation for the Dodgers, you know, first couple seasons as well. You know, a little bit lost to history there, but no, the Dodgers have had a couple of guys like that.
Oh yeah, and a second person, and God knows I hated the Mets, but Dwight Gooden was unbelievable as a young.
Oh, you're right.
I hate his career, but he was unbelievable.
I can't believe I didn't say Doc. You're right.
And Strawberry both, right? We're on those Mets
teams. Oh, yeah.
But Daryl struggled a little bit early on before he really kicked in. Doc did not. Doc was like 16-3 as a 19-year-old and had almost 300 strikeouts. He was he was ridiculous.
He looked like a man out there on that mound. Yep. People I would often hear. And I was living on the West Coast at the time in the military, and people often say he was a young Ferguson Jenkins at the time and a young Bob Gibson.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, thing is, he had amazing control for somebody that threw as hard back then. You just didn't see the overpowering pitchers that would have that kind of control, except for somebody, you know, legendary like Gibson, because you had – Nolan Ryan, it took years before he had really good control. He just was throwing harder than anybody else. But Doc had pinpoint control and that unbelievable 12-6 curveball.
Oh yeah. And for a 4 or 5 year stretch, he was just unhittable until. We all know the first.
Until he just got in too deep. You're right.
Yeah, I hated that happened to him again. I hated the Mets, but I hated to see that
mm-hmm.
where his career went. You know, because I thought he was just going to have a career that was just unbelievable.
Yep, no question. Great stuff, Jeff.
All right, thank you, guys. We'll holler at you later.
All right, thanks for calling. All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. This is fun because it's like, how did I not think of somebody? We haven't had many football thus far or basketball. We had pistol.
I'll tell you baseball. You know what? We got time. I'll tell you a football story real quick. When I got to Auburn, I think I've told this on the air before, but when I got to Auburn, I had a friend who had played football at Sandy Creek High School in Georgia, and he was saying, there's a kid who's coming. He's at Sandy Creek now, but he's going to be in college football soon, and he's going to be the best receiver anybody's ever seen. He's unreal.
Did he go outside the SEC?
I'm thinking, you know what? Yeah, right. Like everybody, especially back then, everybody would come to college and they'd say, "Well, there's a kid back in my high school. Just wait, whatever." And so, you know, I've heard stories like this before, and so I'm not really thinking much of it. But it was Calvin Johnson. Mm-hmm. He was talking about Calvin Johnson.
He went to Tech where he wasn't, you know, he couldn't put up huge numbers.
No, you know what? You think about what in the modern era of NIL and the portal. There are schools, the GDP of countries, right? Schools would give that to Calvin Johnson mm-hmm. to come to the portal to transfer out of Tech And you know what? It wasn't all his fault. Their inability to complete enough. But as a freshman, he was catching game winners and dominating all ACC defensive backs. As a sophomore, Bill, he came to Auburn in the season opener and he looked like an NFL player in the first game of his sophomore season. And he ended up indeed having a Hall of Fame career.
And you know that of course is what Auburn folks are hoping that they see out of Cam Coleman, because thus far there's been nothing to indicate that he's not going to be a special young player.
I would be really careful about comparing any freshman receiver to Calvin Johnson, but I understand why people would look at Cam Coleman and the mind would get there.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Plenty of time for you to join in here on the Friday Drive.
At Dixie Electric, Plumbing, and Air, your company.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 23 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan taking your calls. We're having fun. I mean, it's a lot of, man, memories on how impressive some athletes were, you know, early on in their careers. I mean, it's sort of like the old Coach Dye. I remember quite a few folks would quote Coach Dye when he'd say, if a dog's going to bite, he'll do it as a pup. And you would see that from some of the young guys. First time
puppy,
I saw
puppy with big paws, right? You talk about that. You
know, yeah. Like first time I saw Bo was in the Alabama All-Star game. And this was before the Alabama Mississippi All-Star game. There would be an All-Star game with the top players, sort of like they do in Montgomery now, but it would have the top players in the state. And that was the year after Coach Dye's first year. Auburn had signed Allen Evans, was the top running back in the country by most recruiting services. Tommy Agee. Who was the other big? There was another like 220-pound running back from in-state, and Bo. They had Tim Jesse from down in South Alabama. Auburn had signed a half a dozen running backs. And I'm just talking about the ones from the state of Alabama. I'm not talking the guys from outside the state. But Auburn signed at least five running backs from in-state. And I can't think of the other big guy. But anyway, they were all on the rosters of the two teams, the North and South rosters of the Alabama High School All-Star game. And so a few of us rode over to watch the All-Star game, and there was no doubt. I mean, Bo was a man among boys then. He hadn't gotten the hype.
Would Lionel have been in the same mix?
No, Lionel was already there. Auburn. Okay, yeah. Lionel was already at Auburn. He was there Coach Dye's first year. It was a guy who didn't get an opportunity to put up tremendous numbers, but Auburn had yet another 220-pound big guy who could run. But anyway, Bo was a guy that had played multiple positions, had not played on a team that had a ton of talent around him, and he also played multiple sports. So he hadn't gotten the hype that some of the other guys had. But, I mean, yeah, first time you saw him, it's like he's bigger than anybody else, and he's faster than everybody else, and he's stronger than everybody else. So things like that, when you see those guys for the first time, it's like, wow, this player, if he can stay healthy and things go well for them, has a chance to be pretty darn good. So if you've got anybody that comes to mind, we'd love to hear from you. Basketball, it's a lot of times the great ones, it's obvious. I mean, you know, you see them and they can do some spectacular things at a very young age.
Yeah, I mean, when we saw Jabari the first couple of games, it was like, we've never quite had. I mean, I don't remember the last time. I mean, Barkley was Auburn's last lottery pick, right before.
Yes.
Before.
Yeah, probably.
I think that's right. And
I don't think Chris
or Noah Okoro.
Yeah, that's true.
Okora would have been there, but even, you know what? And all due respect to Isaac, Jabari Smith showed up and with an offensive game that, like, what I remember, we had callers who saw JT Thor, and they said, skilled guy that long who can dribble and put it on the floor too. He could be, at only 17, 18 years old, he could be Kevin Durant. And it's like, no. Kevin Durant
led the nation in scoring
as a freshman in college basketball. Like, Kevin Durant was Kevin Durant was the best player in college basketball.
Yeah.
Would have been first overall in most drafts. Happened to be there with Greg Oden, whatever. I saw Jabari Smith, and I said, you know, I wouldn't have compared that guy to Kevin Durant. Jabari Smith has a ton of Kevin Durant in his game. Like, Jabari Smith, and he's emerging. As a better NBA player in year two, I think Houston's going to make noise in a year or two. The trajectory feels similar to you have two teams in the Western Conference semifinals right now in Minnesota and Oklahoma City that were rebuilding very recently and were among the worst teams in the NBA very recently, and they've added the right mix of players, a lot of them high lottery picks like Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns. For the Thunder, it's Gilgeous Alexander and Chet Holmgren, and having these high draft picks that are contributing, you know, that can turn your fortunes around. And I think Houston could be there sooner than people realize, especially if the guys continue to develop and if they make the right moves in free agency. And Jabari Smith is a huge part of that future in Houston. And you could tell we were going to talk about that guy like that.
Yeah, you're right.
From the first moment he put on a jersey.
It wasn't like you realize slowly. I mean, the thing is, with Isaac, it was a little different. Isaac was a little different. I mean, he's a great, great player, but you didn't just the first time he stepped on the court, you'd go, when you saw him go up and down the court a couple of times, it wasn't like, oh, wow.
Isaac didn't have the offensive game of a lottery pick when he arrived at Auburn. And I guess even his first year in Cleveland, there were people that didn't think he necessarily had the offensive game of a lottery pick. Excellent. I mean, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA from the moment he arrived. A man on, like, he's elite man on defender, and a guy who gives you quality rebounding, other stuff at his position. Jabari, from the first time he touched the ball, you're like, oh, okay, like this is why this guy can do these sort of things. We're just scratching the surface. And, you know, another Auburn prospect, Casey Mize, putting together a couple decent starts finally in the
he's finally healthy
enough to get out there with Detroit. So yeah, hopefully Casey is just starting his prime as well.
334-321-1390. We'll get to another call before we get to our bottom of the hour break. And Mike is next. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, I'm switching from basketball to baseball. Did y'all bring up Fernando Valenzuela?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talked a little bit about Fernando Mania.
Yeah, we had a caller mentioning Fernando.
The whole country was going crazy about that.
I was getting in the car late. Back to basketball, though, I remember the player at Georgia that played for the Hawks a long time.
Dominique?
Yeah, he was like that. The first time you saw him
play
in college, you knew he was NBA.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, it's great to see somebody that just pops on the scene.
Oh, it is fun. I mean, now sometimes it's like, man, if they're on a team that's competing against your team, it's like, go ahead and leave. You're good enough. Go ahead and move on.
Yeah, well, they wasn't doing it that much back then.
No, you're right.
All right, guys.
Keep thanks again, Mike. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still got plenty of time for you to join in. 334-321-1390.
We're probably, I would say within the week, we're going to get settlements in House versus NCAA.
It sure feels that way.
Dellinger has some documents that
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, the Yahoo story from Dellinger, which we'll talk about that during the rest of the show if we can. But there's some big changes possibly coming if these settlements go through.
All right, stick with us for the final half hour of the Friday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Friday afternoon with Bill and Dan. I have gotten an update.
Oh, boy.
And this is interesting because Jason Caldwell has updated Tex, who has updated us, saying that it looks like baseball will not be – probably won't start until around 7 tonight. But the plan is to play. So they're trying to dry everything as much as they can over at the field. So don't be expecting first pitch at 6 o'clock. Let's get back to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Patrick is up next. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Bill. I've listened to you, gosh, since I was in school at Auburn in the 90s. So I had to call and say I heard you and Dan talking about Cam Coleman.
Uh-huh.
And I got to watch him last year about 8 or 9 games. My nephew was his quarterback at Central High School.
Oh, okay.
And I would say that since Pat Nix thinks that Cam Coleman reminds him of Calvin Johnson, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I'd say so.
He's pretty high on that kid, and I know it all depends on if you get hurt, if you stay healthy and whatnot, but that kid's got all the ability in the world. I would watch him just turn on the jets at any moment, and you just couldn't believe the separation speed he had. And Central did not lack for speed last year.
No, you're right. And, you know, I didn't get to see him in person until he was at Auburn. But Scott Bagwell, who has done play-by-play for Auburn High for the last few years, I mean, said immediately after that first game, it's the best high school receiver he'd ever seen. And I thought, well, that's pretty strong. Scott knows what he's talking about. But, I mean, from the time we saw him at practice at Auburn University, there was no question. I mean, it was like when I was talking about Bo. I mean, he is a man among boys out there, and he's younger than all the rest of them.
And it didn't even occur to me. It did not occur to me that Pat Nix did coach both Calvin Johnson in college and Cam Coleman at Central Phoenix City this past year.
Yeah, he was the OC or QB coach for.
Yeah, he was the offensive coordinator. Right.
When Pat was at GT, when Calvin was at George Tech. So, but yes, and I also remember that Reggie Ball was the terrible Georgia Tech quarterback.
That's right.
Right.
That beat us.
Who still beat
twice.
Auburn. Yeah, that's
twice.
Right. Yeah, yep. Sure did.
Yeah. Same guy that I watched with a friend in Athens, Georgia, watching throw the ball out of bounds on 4th and forever to end the game, beat us twice, I think.
And I believe Reggie Ball's little brother, I could have this story wrong, I believe Reggie Ball was related to the Memphis defensive back that tried to take the ball after the bowl game a couple of years ago when he intercepted the ball from Auburn and then tried to keep the ball afterward, and there was like a bit of an altercation. I believe there's a connection. There's a connection there at all. A perennial thorn in the side of the Auburn football program.
Yeah. Well, I heard y'all talk about it. I was like, well, Pat Nix probably knows a little bit about those two guys. And Cam really is. I mean, I probably on more than one occasion saw him just go up and catch a ball with one hand just because he could. And my nephew, who will be the senior quarterback this year, he just shake his head like, you don't have to do that.
Well, I'll tell you what, the thing, I've said this a few times about him, his ability to track the ball in the air is just uncanny.
Unreal. And you'll see him, he'll do this, he'll hit the speed. And all of a sudden, he's just passing. He's like a gazelle. He just gets past everybody. Mm-hmm. He outran the two guys for Thompson, one that Auburn's recruiting, one that was going to Alabama. He split them and took it for the winning touchdown, the state championship game. And it was pure speed. So it's unreal. And they got plenty of talent on that team.
Yeah, you're not
this
kidding.
Coming year. Because I give my nephew Andrew, who would die to go to Auburn. I mean, he's grown up a huge Auburn fan. And I joke with him. I was like, well, you know, guys aren't looking at you. They're watching Cam. They're watching Dalen Upshaw. They're watching Tristan Lyles on defense. They're watching Mal Waldrop. He's like, yeah, I know. I wish they'd watch me some. And he finally got his first offer to Georgia Southern a few weeks ago. So he's pretty excited.
But that's great.
I told him to hang in there. You never know.
That's right.
You never know how these things end up. So. So,
well, and the other thing is, in the days of the transfer portal, go somewhere where you get an opportunity to play, show something, and there's no telling where you could wind up.
Well, I jokingly told him, I said, you should have played basketball this year because they wanted him to play two guard at Central. I was like, you could have shown some athleticism. You didn't have to with the team you had around you. He just had to throw the ball to him. Mm-hmm. So, well, thanks for letting me call in. Sorry it took so long, but I just thought that was worth calling in.
Oh, yeah.
That about Calvin.
Great hearing from you, Patrick. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. 20 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on the Friday Drive. And Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Kind of change the subject. Wasn't Moses Malone the first guy that went from high school to the pros in basketball?
I believe so.
That sounds right. I know.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
I know Kevin Garnett did it in the 90s, but I don't believe he was the first one to ever do it. I know he was the first one in a while who had attempted to jump straight from high school to college to the NBA without playing college basketball.
Did Darryl Dawkins do it too? But I think Moses was.
Okay, and I was going to ask Dan because he's more of an NBA guy. So when did the whole high school to the pros in basketball start, and when did they put in the one and done thing?
So I think Garnett made it fashionable again in the 90s. Garnett jumping to the NBA and not being lost as an NBA player at 18 and 19 years old convinced other people that they could do it. Kobe Bryant jumps to from high school to the NBA in the late 90s.
I think the ABA started it. The NBA was not allowing it, but the ABA did. And that's what sort of got it started for the guys that were that far advanced.
Okay. And then, so early 90s, they started the high school to pros jump. When did they put in the one and done?
I want to say that's after, that's probably the Greg Oden, Kevin Durant year, because those two guys would have gone straight to the pros right out of high school. So probably 06, 05 or 06, they put in a rule requiring at least 1 year of college or 1 year out of your high school class to that there had been quite a few players in that run between Garnett in 95 and the implementation of that rule about a decade later. There had been quite a few players who projected as high-level college players. They'd gone to the draft instead, and either they're not drafted at all or they're drafted very late, and it probably disrupted their the development of their careers. A lot of guys, probably made the wrong choice going straight to the NBA draft out of high school instead of attempting a college basketball career. And I think that teams decided, and also for NBA teams, it was really tough to evaluate really what you were getting by only seeing a guy out of high school and seeing workouts and things. And so, I think it was it was a rule they put in place which got the ball rolling on NIL and player movement and things that have you remember the competition that the NCAA was going to get from Overtime Elite and the G League really helped get the ball moving on NIL, and so it's a really important piece of college athletics history. But probably 06, 07.
05. I'm reading the NBA and the NBA Players Association agreed in starting in 2005 to prohibit the drafting of high school players. Draftee must be at least 19 and at least 1 year from his high school graduation or expected high school graduation.
I want to say Andrew Bynum was one of the last players taken right out of high school, and from that point on, guys had to go pro. So about a decade between Garnett making it trendy again in the 90s and the NBA getting rid of it.
Okay, and LeBron was probably the biggest one out of high school because I saw him playing high school and he was the man among men.
Kobe, LeBron, and Garnett are your three most prominent. Garnett because he did it, although Garnett wasn't the first overall pick in the draft. But then you had other Kobe was also not the first overall pick. LeBron was. Kwame Brown was coming straight out of high school to the Jordan Wizards. Dwight Howard was drafted straight out of high school first overall by the Magic.
Okay, and now what year was LeBron? I know he's been in like 20
years. 03 draft.
Like 03.
Okay. High school class of 03, yeah.
Okay. All right, guys, that's all I had. War Eagle, talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, Mitch. And Mitch is right. Moses Malone was the first basketball player to go directly from high school to the pros.
How about this? Moses Malone was still on an NBA roster the year Kevin Garnett was drafted by the Minnesota Timberwolves in 1995. 20-year career there. And you don't think of Garnett and Moses Malone as ever interacting in an NBA.
No, it's peers.
Yeah,
no,
that's that. Yeah, there was a year where those two intersected.
All right, we will get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in as we wind it down here on the Friday Drive.
Big eating in Auburn and Opelika means
Build the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final segment here on this Friday afternoon. Been a fun show. I mean, we've had a lot of different discussions, lots of memories of players that were pretty darn good when they first were in the limelight.
And look, and we're gonna preview the upcoming seasons for Auburn football and Auburn
men's
basketball.
We've done that a few times.
We've done that. We're gonna continue to do that. But yeah, I think talking about the abandoned Red Lobster yesterday really woke something up in us. And yeah, we'll open things up and nostalgia and some of your favorites from the past.
Well, I mean, we've even talked about. You know, we're previewing a little bit of the Auburn roster because Cam Coleman got tossed in there as, you know, thinking he could be one of those kind of guys.
At some point, I probably did stumble on the fact that Pat Nix was on the staff at Georgia.
Yeah,
Tech.
I hadn't thought about that.
And Calvin was there, and he was the head coach at Central for Cam Coleman. But that's he's been around a couple of pretty good receivers young in their early in their careers with those two guys. And so yeah, it's an interesting comparison, and I agree with the caller. Coach Nix would probably know. He would know if a guy has Calvin Johnson.
Be a fair person to assess or to come up with that comparison.
Johnson-esque stuff. That would be a guy who knows it.
All right. Mentioned earlier, and we've never gotten around to talking about the players. Auburn has in on official visits for football. The recruiting window really reopened just a couple of days ago, and this is the first weekend players can be making official visits. And Auburn has a few guys coming in, one very highly touted offensive lineman, and Andrew Babalola. Love the name. 6'7", 280-pounder out of Overland Park, Kansas. Gee, that's home of the NCAA headquarters, where Babalola is from. I mean, he has some big-time schools after him. He's visiting Auburn, and he's also being pursued by Alabama, Michigan, Oklahoma, Southern Cal, Texas A&M, among other schools. So, I mean, he's on everybody's list. That's one of the things I really pay attention to is what other schools are recruiting a player. A lot of times, players, you may not see some big schools after a player, but once one big school gets them in, all of a sudden everybody else wants to get them in. Auburn bringing another offensive lineman in from outside the immediate area, and that's Malachi Goodman, who is a 6'5", 310 or so pound offensive tackle prospect out of Paramus, New Jersey. So he's coming in this weekend. He is also visiting Penn State, Georgia, Alabama, and USC.
Don't know if he's
some familiar. Are like you've got Alabama, Michigan, and USC recruiting both of the guys that are coming in along with Auburn. So, I mean, I think that's a good sign, but it also is very, very tough competition recruiting-wise.
Don't know if he's coming in for a visit this weekend, but I was reading a little bit about Malcolm Simmons' teammate, the receiver class of Zadarian Morgan, is a Benjamin Russell receiver, class of 26,
right.
Who is already one of the top 20 players in the nation on the earth. He's 92. He's got a 92 rating. Nationally, he's the 20th ranked player in the class of 26, number 4 receiver in the class of 26, and he's a number 2 player in the state for the class 26. And Auburn's, I believe, recently made the offer to him.
And then Auburn also bringing in one of the top running backs around. Auburn looking to sign a couple of running backs this next year.
Offered earlier this spring, according to Christian.
Okay.
Zadarian Morgan got that offer.
That makes sense. And now, I have to apologize. I'm not 100% sure on the pronunciation.
Oh, I'm excited. What's it,
of the running back? It looks like Ousmane Chroma.
Okay.
But it's O-U-S-M-A-N-E, so it could be Ousmane. But it, I would guess Ousmane. But, I mean, one of the top running backs. And it's not like the old days. In the old days, I would have known all these guys. But I sort of leave it up to the guys who are doing the personal contacts. But he's a big running back, 6'2", 215, 220 out of Leesburg, Georgia. So those are three players in on official visits with Hugh Freeze and company this weekend.
And I've been informed by Adam Cole through social media that the tarp is off the field at Plainsman Park, and they're going to get rolling here pretty soon with the
so maybe closer to the original starting time. Tarp's coming off. They've still got to do a little more prep before they get started.
7:02.
Okay. Official
well,
that's
time.
That's what Jason had passed along. That it looked around like it would be around 7 o'clock.
7:02 is what we're hearing from the from the folks at the ballpark, and so looking to get some baseball in tonight. A penultimate game, always love an opportunity.
That's right. Well, Auburn could clinch a winning season overall with a win tonight. Also clinch the series and have won their last two, and also put a lot of pressure on Alabama. If they win tonight, Alabama, I think, needs to win tomorrow to put themselves in decent position to make the NCAA tournament, short of winning the SEC tournament.
And as tough as this season has been for Auburn, I think they would love to be able to
say, with a series win over Alabama.
How about you won your last two series?
Yeah.
You know, you play, as tough as the season was, you know, some of the young pieces, the guys kept fighting, and to win your last two and to spoil Alabama's postseason chances, I think that would be the best possible way to end a very difficult season for the Auburn baseball team.
Yeah, so that should be coming up over at Plainsman Park.
Is it Dylan tonight? Who's getting the?
Oh no, Chase Alsop.
Chase Alsop. Okay.
Yeah, Chase, who's pitched really well his last couple of times out, will be getting the start for the Tigers tonight in that ball game, which you can hear over on Wings 94.3. They're probably on right now talking about letting stations know when they're going to be coming back. But that'll be coming up on Wings a little later on. We're just about out of time here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Been a fun show. Appreciate all the calls from callers giving us memories of impressive first-timer or debuts.
Hey, Mystic Dan, go get him.
That's right, Preakness tomorrow.
Go get him, Mystic Dan.
Looking for the second leg of the Triple Crown.
Tell you what, heavyweight boxing tomorrow, too. Usyk and Tyson Fury for the heavyweight title. You know, folks might be poking their head into that one as it's not what it used to be, heavyweight title.
No, you're right about that.
But it's still a big-time event when it's defended.
A lot going on in sports, and we'll review it, recap it, and much more. And Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com should be with us on Monday as well. But we're out of time here on the Friday Drive. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.